number 11, which is the wetland assessment and mapping tools. We have presentations about the California rapid assessment methods and Eco Atlas.
I'm going to ask Amy Tyler to come up, and she's going to introduce some of our other guest speakers, which we would like to bring to our guest speakers and give their time to come speak to us about this. So, Toby.
Good afternoon, board members. My name is Toby Tyler. My name is Toby Tyler with the North Basin Regulatory Unit. And just want to remind you that there's some addendums for this item because of the late changes in the presentation.
I think you're going to have to talk even louder.
Okay. There's some addendums because of some changes in the presentation. So, with the recent discussions on wetland restoration and climate change, we thought this would be a good time to present to talk to you about some of these tools that we have available to us to help preserve and protect and restore wetlands. I'm in charge. I hope I pushed the right button. Yeah.
There we go.
These two tools are the California Rapid Assessment Method, or CRAM, for assessing wetland condition, and Eco Atlas for displaying wetlands and other aquatic features on a map. So this information item brings you presentations from the San Francisco staff of the San Francisco Estuary Institute, Sarah Pierce and Christina Grosso. And then we have Shinrei Lee, who is previously with a division manager at Region 2 and now Assistant Executive Officer at Region 1 to give us a presentation on how well Eco Atlas and its predecessor Wetland Tracker have been used and how well it's been benefited staff there in managing wetlands and protecting wetlands there. So some of you may remember hearing about some of these tools, particularly CRAM, because the EPA wetland grant we received several years ago, and the several EO reports, executive officer reports that were written on this topic. This is a picture after holding one of 2 3-day CRAM training sessions a couple years back. So we'll start with CRAM discussion by Sarah. And then we'll move to Christina's talk on Eco Atlas. This is the main page for Eco Atlas. Both of these tools are part of EPA's Level 1, 2, 3 approach to protecting wetlands, whereby Level 1 is mapping, Level 2 is rapid assessment of overall condition, and Level 3 is more intensive assessment. This approach has been adopted and endorsed by the California Water Quality Monitoring Council, California Wetland Monitoring Work Group, and the State Board's Wetland and Riparian Area Protection Policy. The concept to this Level 1, 2, 3 approach is that you cannot protect what you don't know is there. So the first thing to do is to create a map of the aquatic resources in order to see the on a map where the various types of wetlands and aquatic resources are. Second, we can't expect to do intensive assessments on all waters, and so we need to develop rapid assessment protocols. This is where CRAM comes in. Then we can save the more intensive Level 3 assessments for the higher priority waters. The point here is that CRAM is now an established, scientifically verified assessment methodology that is being widely used throughout California and that has been shown through the Tahoe Ramp Project to be useful here for assessment of wetlands and other aquatic resources, including stream environment zones. CRAM is also a procedure identified by the Corps of Engineers as in their guidance for specifying mitigation ratios for 404 applications, 401 applications, and 404 applications. What's driving this? We all know the dollars that have been spent protecting and restoring wetlands and riparian areas around the state with little or no feedback to the public on the effectiveness of these investments. What is needed is effective agency-coordinated monitoring methods that have been scientifically verified. Secondly, this information needs to be easily and readily transmitted to the public, such as through websites like the one shown here with the Water Quality Council portal and EcoAtlas website itself. So with that introduction, we'll transition to Sarah's talk about CRAM. While Sarah is coming up, I just want to say if you have any questions during the presentations or in between the presentations, please ask away.
Any questions so far? Thank you. So some people might be hard of hearing, so you need to really project.
Absolutely, no problem.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Board. My name is Sarah Pierce. I am a geomorphologist at the San Francisco Estuary Institute and also the lead CRAM trainer for Northern California. And so my job this afternoon is to give you a rapid introduction to the California Rapid Assessment Method and also show a few examples of how CRAM has been used and might be applicable here in this region. So CRAM, first of all, is a field methodology. So it's a field-based walk-and-talk tool that can provide rapid, repeatable, and numeric assessment of the overall condition of a wetland. And that condition is really based upon the visible indicators, things that you can see in the field, of its form, its structure, and its setting. And all of these are relative to the least impacted reference condition for that wetland type. So overall condition is really the capacity or the potential of that wetland to provide the functions and services that we would expect from that type of wetland in its natural setting. And rapid really means that it takes a field team of 2 to 3 trained practitioners about 3 hours in the field to do the assessment. And really, that's 3 hours from the car to results. But there are a couple things that CRAM is not. It's not a wetland identification or delineation methodology. It's not a classification system, although it is loosely based on the hydrogeomorphic method classification system. And then lastly, although CRAM doesn't directly measure the functions, it does measure the capacity for those functions to occur. So if you're standing in a very high-quality, high-condition wetland, then we presume that those functions associated with that high condition are existing in that wetland. So CRAM is applicable to all wetlands across the state. And CRAM is set up in terms of modules. So there is a module that exists for each wetland type. That means riverine, depressional, and in some cases there's submodules. So for instance, there's a submodule that is specific to vernal pools. Lakes, estuarine wetlands, and then probably very applicable up here, the slope wetland module, which includes wet meadows, seeps and springs, forested slopes. So CRAM is really based upon this fundamental building block. It's the assessment area, and that's the area out on the ground that the field team is actually looking at and making their observations in. There's very detailed guidance within each of the field books to help the field practitioners repeatedly delineate, draw that assessment area that includes the wetland itself and its associated riparian area. And CRAM is set up so that the overall wetland condition is comprised of 4 different attributes: the landscape and buffer, the hydrology, physical structure, and biotic structure. And these 4 attributes exist for all the different modules. Then within each attribute, there are a number of metrics, 2 to 3 metrics, and sometimes even submetrics. And those metrics are the things that the practitioners are actually looking at, very specific measurements or observations to be making. So as an example, here in the landscape and buffer attribute, there's 2 metrics, the aquatic area abundance and the buffer metric. And in this case, the buffer metric has 3 submetrics: percent of AA with buffer, average buffer width, and buffer condition. So the field team goes out in the field, and they're looking at each of these metrics or submetrics, making observations or measurements. And then they go to the scoring table. And the scoring table has 4 mutually exclusive alternative states of condition. And these four states represent the full range of possible condition. So this example is average buffer width. You can see a very quantitative metric in which the measured average buffer width that you got at your wetland would fall into one of these four categories. Now, CRAM provides two different scores, an alphabetical score, A, B, C, D. We've all been to school, and we understand that you want to be an A student, not a D student. But then also to provide the numeric aspect of it. It also provides a numerical score that goes along hand in hand with that alphabetic score. So out in the field, you look at each of the metrics and you give it a score. And you can move from the letter score to the numeric score. And then for each attribute, you get an attribute score. And that attribute score is simply the total points out of the total points possible for that attribute. So in this case, the biotic score got a 75. You would do that for each of the four attributes. And then to determine the overall index score, the overall score for your wetland, those four attribute scores simply roll up as an average to your overall wetland condition score. In addition, there's also a stressor checklist. And this takes a look at some of the actions on the ground, the anthropogenic actions that would be directly affecting the condition that's observed for each of these four attributes. But of note, the stressor checklist doesn't have any direct impact upon the score. It's a kind of a separate, standalone aspect of CRAM. But the stressor checklist can be very, very powerful. It can help you identify some of the reasons for some of the low scores you may have received. It can help you identify some potential corrective actions and allow you to develop hypotheses between scores and stressors. So that overall score, that index score, is combining the indicators from each of our four attributes to represent our overall condition, which is related, remember, again, to functional capacity, or you can think of it as overall wetland health. Now, some people get a little bit of heartburn about taking such a complex system and rolling it all up into just a single number. But we do that many times, in many aspects of our life. When newborn babies pop out, we give them the NAFGAR score, the Dow Jones, or even think about all the blood, sweat, and tears from organic chemistry that we went through in college, and it all simply got rolled up into a one number, our GPA. So, despite that heartburn, we do that in many aspects of our life. But we'd be the first to point out that you cannot just look at that overall index score, that one number. You really do need to drill down to the attribute scores, and in some cases, even drill down to those metric scores to truly understand what's happening in your wetland. As an example, here's a salt marsh up in Humboldt County. It got an index score of 70. And it did so by getting fairly low buffer and landscape and hydrology scores, and then higher physical structure and biotic structure scores. Now, just a half mile down the road is another estuarine wetland in Humboldt. It got a 72, essentially the same overall index score. It did so completely opposite, by getting high landscape and buffer and hydrology scores, and then lower physical and biotic structure scores. So you really do have to drill down to understand what's going on. Now, the heart and soul of CRAM is really its website and its underlying database. And on the website, you can go there to find out many different things, including getting all the materials that you might need to go out in the field, to figure out what type of training sessions exist or who has been trained as a practitioner. After you go out in the field, you go there to enter your data. Or probably most applicable to you on the board is to actually go there and view some of the data. And Christina, following me, will show a few examples of taking a look at some of that data. But if you go there, you quickly see a map of California with a dot for all of the assessments that have been done. If you zoom in progressively, you'll see the polygon of the assessment area, the area that was actually assessed. And then CRAM also has the ability to create a summary report in the PDF format. That's a nice, simple report of that assessment that was done that could be incorporated in permit applications or even as part of long-term monitoring reporting. CRAM program's also been subject to extensive peer review, including a number of journal publications, but then also some agency review, including Army Corps, the State Water Board peer review process, and then lastly, swamp endorsement. So let me shift gears a little bit now and show you a few examples of how CRAM has been used. And this really falls into two different arenas. The ambient assessment arena, which occurs primarily at the watershed scale, but also can be at the statewide scale. And then the project assessment arena. And under that arena, many different types of projects, including figuring out baseline condition of your wetlands, helping with impact assessment and alternative comparison, helping with restoration or mitigation planning and permitting, and then lastly, long-term monitoring. So in the ambient world, this is a use of CRAM, which requires it's a probabilistic survey conducted for wetlands in a specific wetland class. So for instance, riverine creeks. And it requires a complete map of all your wetlands. So as Toby was just talking about, that level one, that mapping of our wetlands so that we know what's there to be able to protect. And then it also requires a stratified random sampling methodology that relates the scores that you get at those locations to a bigger wetland area. So as an example, an ambient assessment was completed here in the Upper Truckee River watershed. And so we started off with the level one mapping in the watershed and took that channel network and stratified both by stream order and then also by urban versus non-urban areas, because that was determined in the meetings to be a very important thing to understand the condition in those two populations. From this, we used a random sampling methodology to select 40 sample sites. And then at each of those 40 sites, we went out and conducted a CRAM assessment using both SFEI staff and then also the local trained practitioners, including there's a handful of regional board staff here that came out with me to help. So what are the results? So a standard way of looking at CRAM results is a cumulative distribution frequency curve. So it's the entire population of scores in your universe. And so here on the x-axis, we have our overall CRAM score. And then on the y, the percent of total stream length. So here I'm showing this curve in purple for the Upper Truckee River watershed. You can look at it by going down to the 50th percentile. Think of it as your median score. And you can follow that across and see that in this watershed, the median score, CRAM score, was an 83. Now let's look at the statewide condition for comparison. So here's the statewide curve, and its median score is a 73. So you can see, in general, Upper Truckee River watershed condition for riverine wetlands are better than the statewide condition. The entire curve is shifted to the right. But you'll notice that up at the very top, the curves actually cross, meaning that there's fewer of those highest quality condition wetlands in Upper Truckee as compared to the state. Then also, CRAM has been used in terms of project assessments. And this is really a structured assessment of our wetland condition used for many different reasons, perhaps to support an application, a permit application, an environmental review, an alternatives analysis, or even a mitigation proposal. Also, for longer-term monitoring of these projects. Now, these assessments can be done either by the project applicants or by the reviewing agencies themselves. So there's many different project-related uses of CRAM. For example, you can use CRAM to help sample the full range of wetland condition at an impact site, which then can help you with your impact identification, your avoidance, your minimization. It can also help you identify and perhaps negotiate your mitigation requirements, help you identify your reference conditions, both on-site in your project and then perhaps off-site on mitigation sites. It can help you characterize your existing condition and your aquatic resources before you go out and enhance or restore your wetland. And lastly, it can help assess the performance of mitigation projects. A few examples. So let's start off here in the Delta with Prospect Island. Now, this is an area that is a Department of Water Resources and Department of Fish and Wildlife Restoration project. It's currently a giant depressional wetland, one of these old historically farmed islands. They would like to breach the levee and return it back to tidal action, thus transforming it from a depression to an estuarine system. And so they came to us asking for help in determining the baseline condition. They had very limited time and money to do that. So we brought CRAM in and conducted 18 assessments in both of those islands total. So that really means 6 days of field work. And we're able to provide them a baseline condition for those wetlands. That's a significant cost savings to the project. Now, and also, they plan on taking those sample sites and then continuing to go back and assess them as the project progresses, both immediately after restoration and then as part of longer-term monitoring. Next comes an example from SoCal. This is impact assessment and alternative comparison using the Imperial Valley Solar Project. Now, this is a project where there's a large number of waters in the project footprint, and the applicant was proposing to fill 165 acres of those waters. So CRAM is used here to help evaluate that baseline stream condition. Using the assessments, they were able to analyze direct and indirect impacts to 6 different alternatives. And using those alternatives, they were able to redesign to really avoid and minimize impacts as best they could. They also used it in talking with the Army Corps in negotiating their mitigation need. So the outcome was really that they were able to avoid a lot of high-quality primary streams. They're able to minimize the impacts through the reductions of that fill in the roads. And although they did have to slightly reduce the sun catcher layout, they actually didn't have very much impact upon their energy generation capacity there. And then last example is an example of using CRAM in terms of the long-term monitoring up in Yosemite National Park. So last year, the National Park Service released their Merced Wild and Scenic River Management Plan, which is really their guiding document that they're going to use to protect and enhance their river values and really manage the visitor use over the next 20 years. In this document, they've identified management objectives, use capacities, and have prescribed long-term monitoring to ensure that all of their objectives are actually met. Now, specifically, CRAM was prescribed as an indicator to help monitor the status of their riverine habitat or the Merced River flowing through the entire length of the Yosemite Valley. So their main objective was looking for a method that could comprehensively assess the river habitat. They wanted to do it on a repeating basis every 3 to 5 years in order to detect any potential visitor use impacts before those impacts got to a stage that was really going to be harmful. So looking at the scores that were collected in both 2010 and 2014, they were able to set up thresholds where if the condition crossed those thresholds, that it would trigger management action. So here's a quick example showing the assessments along that entire length of Merced, with 2010 scores down below and 2014 scores up above. And you can see that for some of the reaches, the condition had improved, but then for others, it had degraded. And so those sites, those reaches, are now on the watch list for the parks. And they're specifically watching those locations until the 2017 survey, where they will go back out and use CRAM again, and at that point determine if action is needed for some of these reaches. So you can see that CRAM is one tool in our larger monitoring toolbox. It can assist with any watershed level decision making. It can really be a useful tool for comparing scores both through time and then also spatially across the state. It can help us characterize patterns in our wetlands, in a project, in a landscape, in a watershed, or even in a region. It can also really enhance our project or watershed characterization, our impact assessment, mitigation planning, or monitoring. And it's really neat sitting on the implementation committee because new applications of CRAM are popping up every single year. So it's really neat to see how inventive people can be in applying CRAM. And so with that, I will stop, and I'm happy to take any of your questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
No, thank you.
Mr. Sandell? Yes, of course.
Have you had experience with citizen monitoring programs where they're trained in CRAM use, and how have you seen that used?
Great question. The short answer would be it's been very limited use. I've had probably about 10 in total folks from citizen groups come to trainings and they've been very excited about it because they see it as a fairly low-cost tool that they can use, you know, over the long term within their group. So a handful of people have come to be trained and are starting to use it. For example, there's a fellow at the city of Roseville, and he's working in their Adopt-a-Creek program. And so while he is the trained practitioner, there's himself and a couple other City of Roseville staff, they're really using it as a tool with their volunteers to assess these sites that they're working on over the next handful of years. So yes, but very limited.
So thank you. That was great information. I can see this is a very well thought out tool, having experienced some earlier versions of CRAM in the field. How long does it take a person being introduced to this tool to be proficient in it?
Great question. So we ask that practitioners are actually trained, which means a 5-day training session, and at that point they have all the skills necessary to be able to go out and conduct assessments. Obviously, it's going to be better if you already have experience in that wetland type. Yeah. You know, if you've never stepped foot in a salt marsh, don't pick up CRAM and go out there and expect to know everything. In addition to that, we also find that people get better with the method with a little bit more practice. So I'd say even by conducting about 10 assessments, they become much more standardized and repeatable and are doing better assessments.
Mm-hmm. It's very complex. I mean, it's well thought out, but it's complex.
One of our taglines is CRAM is simple, but it's not easy.
Yeah, right. Great. Thank you very much.
Great, thank you.
And the next presentation is... Christina, is that correct?
Christina. Good afternoon, Board. Thank you for this opportunity to talk with you. My name is Christina Grasso, and I'm the Program Manager for the Environmental Informatics Program at SFEI. And today I will be presenting on EcoAtlas, which is an online tool for visualizing the abundance, diversity, and condition of wetlands and streams in the watershed context. And this tool has been developed over a decade by numerous partners from the regulatory and the scientific community, by user groups that have provided invaluable input on using the tool, making it more useful, from a very skilled technical team, and of course our generous funders. So there is an emerging tool set to help with watershed decision making. There are numerous tools that have been developed over time that address specific data management needs and reporting needs. And these are all focused on improving and protecting the environment. But today I'm just going to talk about a subset of these tools that focus on visualizing the abundance, diversity, and condition of wetlands and streams. So California has 4 regional data centers. SFEI is the regional data center for the San Francisco Bay Delta, Northern Coastal, and Sierra regions. There are similar groups that are managing data in Central Coast, Southern California, and the Central Valley. And we all have the same database and follow the same business rules for storing and managing water quality data. We then exchange these data to the state's Environmental Data Exchange Network, or called CDEN. And once it's standardized in this centralized database, then it can be pulled out and used in these various tools and applications, such as the My Water Quality portals and also EcoAtlas. So today I'm going to show you just a few of the watershed-based support tools. that focus on planning, tracking, and visualization. I'll give you a brief overview of these, and then I'll give you a live demo of actually one of the tools. So we've heard from several other presentations today that for planning purposes, we need a common base map to be able to coordinate the watershed health across these different federal, state, and local agencies. So the California Aquatic Resource Inventory is the base map that is used for the state and EcoAtlas. This database, this data layer was developed with the best available data from the National Hydrology Dataset and also the National Wetlands Inventory. And Sarah already mentioned a little bit about the Tahoe Demonstration Project, but as part of that effort, two of the watersheds in Tahoe were more intensely mapped. These were the Upper Truckee River and the Third Creek watershed. So these intensely mapped watersheds have been incorporated into CARI, or into, again, the statewide base map. So now we have our base map, and we want to begin to start tracking project information on this base map. So as part of the demonstration project, 5 projects were uploaded for the Tahoe area. So each of these projects are located on a map. You can also click on any one of the polygons to receive a project information page that summarizes the projects, the contacts, the events, the habitat plan, and any CRAM assessments that are associated with these projects. And some of the features of the tracking tool include being able to look at these maps on this statewide map. Most of the projects in EcoAtlas now all have a 401 water certification permit. Having this information on the map, you can begin to share data and information through the maps, because each of the projects has its own file repository where any photos or reports can be uploaded and viewed by anyone on this tool. And also, you can begin to do spatial queries and search the maps for projects of interest. Now, how do we get projects into the map? One way is through the online 401 application tool. And this is a tool that was developed with the State Water Resources Control Board and several of the regional boards, including Lahontan. And this tool is a beta version right now, and it is designed to track the permit negotiation process between water board staff and the applicant to deliver an approved certification. So some of the main features of this online 401 tool include having a standard web-based data entry form that is the same for all regions throughout the state. So information is being stored in a standardized way. It includes a mapping tool, so that we can get an accurate outline of the project, the mitigation, and the impact, so that we can easily upload this information into EcoAtlas once the project has been approved. There's a file repository that stores all the various emails and documents that are associated with approving a 401 certification. And then there's numerous project management and tracking tools that make the whole process more transparent. So there are tools that will alert staff and applicants of upcoming deadlines, of when a clock has been started, or the different phases of an application. And so the main benefit of this tool is it's a really shared environment for both the applicant and line staff to work together to negotiate a 401 permit. So now that we have our base map and we have projects on the map, our next set of tools are to visualize this information. So EcoAtlas is an information delivery system. It is not a database. It pulls in data layers that are already stored in other databases. So for example, it pulls in the CRAM information that Sarah talked about. We have the Aquatic Resource Inventory that comes in as a base layer. And then we also are bringing in information such as the water and sediment toxicity data from the state database from CDEM. And once these data are put into EcoAtlas, then they can be synthesized and reported in different ways. One example is the landscape profile, which I will go into more detail and show you a demo of, but also that information can be used in other applications, such as the My Water Quality portals. The whole goal of this is just to show you the flexibility of the system, that we can bring in additional data sets. So, for example, we're working with the Delta Conservancy to bring in new data layers that will help them assess their habitat restoration projects. So EcoAtlas aggregates information from these different sources to help inform key environmental regulatory and management decisions. As Sarah mentioned, it is the main delivery system for public CRAM assessments, so users can download that information in a tabular information or spatially. And this is where CARI, the project tracker, and the landscape profile tool all reside within EcoAtlas. So Sarah briefly mentioned about being able to access the CRAM information. So there is a tool that allows you to visualize and to download the information from ambient and project surveys, as well as reference sites. And this allows users to filter on the criteria they're interested in, such as a range of scores or an assessment year. Then they can access all the individual scores, the metric, attribute, and index scores, and then download this information if they want to use it for analysis or for reporting reasons. And this is just an example of some of the Upper Truckee River assessments. So for each of these points, you can drill down and get more information right while you're looking at the map as you're kind of comparing different areas. So the landscape profile tool then aggregates all these different sources for your area of interest. And there's an online report and a printed report that I can go into and give you a live demo if there are not any questions on what I've discussed already. No? Thank you so much. So this is the homepage for EcoAtlas. You can get to this page by going to ecoatlas.org. It is not password protected, and it's currently available right now. So let's just scroll down and select the map for the Sierra region. It's taking a little bit of time. And let me just zoom in a little bit to the Tahoe area. Okay, so right now you see the aquatic resource layer, and you can increase the transparency of the rivers and streams to see the real detailed information that we have in this region. So let me just go ahead and close this to get that out of the way. And now I'm going to go up to layers. I'm going to select the wetland projects layer, and then I'm also going to select the CRAM layer. So you can see the CRAM sites are the red dots, and the projects are these green and orange polygons, and the colors are based on the status of the project. So if you go over here to Tools and select Landscape Profile from the toolbox, there are four ways to generate your area of interest. So you can auto-delineate a basin using the USGS stream stats. You can select a predefined area, so we already have the county and congressional districts and hydrologic regions that are already in here, so you could select one of those. You can also upload a KML file. If you already have a file of your area of interest, you can upload that. But I'm going to show you how to draw your area of interest. This takes no GIS expertise. It's a very easy-to-use tool. You just click on the pencil, and you can begin outlining your polygon. Now, of course, you can take more time and make a more realistic polygon. I'm just doing this quickly for demo purposes, but you can get a more detailed polygon. You can also adjust the polygon if you've made a mistake, for example, and you want to adjust the area that you're interested in. And then you can click on that polygon, and it will bring up an online landscape profile that's summarizing the information for the data sets for that area of interest. And it's just taking a little bit of time to calculate this. And you can also save your polygon for future use. So, for example, if you know that you want to use this again, you can just go ahead and save the polygon to your desktop, and that will allow you to upload it at a later date. I think the connection's a little bit slow, which is causing this to take a bit of time. Okay, let me try a smaller polygon. So I'm going to clear my polygon and draw a much smaller one. Okay. I do believe it's the internet's connection. So basically what will come up is an online summary that will tell you all the different aquatic resources that are in that area. It will list the different projects that are available so that you can click on those links and automatically get more information. It will also list all of the CRAM assessments that are listed within your area so you can easily access information. It also provides information on the human population and housing density based on the census, and also the level of intensity of development based on the national land cover data set. This is really unfortunate that this is not working
Maybe
properly.
Maybe we could ask you questions.
Perfectly, yes, thank you.
And while you're answering questions, okay. Might appear. Does anybody have any questions?
Sure, I have a question.
Yes.
How did the CRAM assessments get in there? So we heard, I mean, each time, I was just asking about how the CRAM assessments get in there.
So basically, we pull in all the public CRAM data from the CRAM database. And so it's one layer that we use in EcoAtlas. So similar to how all the aquatic resources are one layer, then the CRAM assessments are another layer.
Okay.
So it's done through scripting, and it's done automatically. As soon as a practitioner says that an assessment is public, then it will be displayed in EcoAtlas.
Okay, I see.
So there's a weekly job that takes all the public assessments and displays it on EcoAtlas.
So can people keep the CRAM assessments from being public?
Yes.
Okay.
And they often do that when they're QAing them, so they want to make sure that everything's accurate, and then they'll mark it as public.
Is there some sort of person that goes through and makes sure that they agree that the CRAM assessment is appropriate?
Well, all the people who are entering data have to be a trained CRAM practitioner, mm-hmm. so they have to have gone through a training course that Sarah was talking about. So
but there's not like a someone then who's like
so
the gatekeeper.
You have to talk so that the person in the back of the room could hear
I'm
you.
Sorry, yes.
Well, I guess I was curious if there was some sort of gatekeeper for the CRAM assessments who then says, are these, do we all agree? And I think the response was, everyone's trained. Right. I was just curious if there may be disagreements on.
Well, then each.
I'll also jump in and say that as part of the training, we say that the users of the CRAM data need to provide a little bit of QA on that. So, you know, if you are a line staff here in this region and a score is rolling across your desk, you do a couple simple steps that we talked about in the training, such as making sure that the person that conducted that assessment was trained, and a couple of other simple things.
Okay.
Mr. Sandel, do you have any questions?
No, this is wonderful thing to see. I'd love to get online and Google it.
Yeah. Yes, I'm sorry.
Well, so I have a question similar to Kim's, which is how does the 401 application information get into this?
That mechanism has not been set up yet because the online 401 tool is still in beta version. But the idea is that we would set up a similar script that once a project has been approved, then it would be moved into EcoAtlas on a regular basis.
So it's not nothing. There's nothing that the hunt staff has to do in order to get the 401 application information into EcoAtlas. Is that correct?
Well,
if somebody wants to use it.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
The online 401 tool was set up to automate that process. Right now, the State Board is reviewing the tool for release and to have more maintenance funding for it. We went through a whole pilot study where we got hundreds of comments on it, but now the next phase is for the State Board to approve its use.
Okay.
Any time frame for that?
It's been delayed for a while now, so we are in the process of developing other project entry forms that can be used because we really need to automate the process to get projects in. We've automated the process for getting the CRAM scores in. The data entry forms do a lot of validation and checking and QAing, and then we set up the weekly scripts to move the data in, so we really need a more automated process for moving the projects in.
I suggest we keep moving.
Yes,
forward.
And you can always go to the About page,
right.
And there's a demo on there about how to conduct a landscape profile tool.
We'll all go home and play with our computers. Thank you very much.
And I have one more slide, though.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay. So, what are possible ways for implementing these tools in the Lahontan area? So we talked about the need for a base map. So the Spatial Informatics Group has continued to really map the rest of the basin, not just those two watersheds that are currently in CARI, and it includes the stream environmental zone. So there needs to be some funding that could be used to add that great information into the base map that you can use for looking at your projects. There's also an online editor tool that will allow users to go in and continue to make suggestions because it's so important to have this map as accurate as possible. So there's a tool that will record all of these requests for future edits and additions. Then to upload more projects. So right now, we've talked a little bit about the online 401 tool is available, but it's still waiting for state funding. There's also going to be these data entry forms that will allow new projects to be entered in a more automated fashion. We're currently working on that, and those forms will be available in September. This way, this would allow users to look at projects on a map of the surface waters. And we could maybe even expand the definition of projects to include other types of projects, for example, stormwater projects. And then in terms of visualizing, you could begin to start using some of these watershed profile tools for visualizing and planning in the watershed context. We are currently working on establishing a link between EcoAtlas and the Environmental Improvement Program Reporting Tool that is collecting and tracking information within the basin, within Tahoe. And so EcoAtlas could be the spatial component of providing that information. And then we also just recently received some new funding along with our partners from the US EPA, to set up an alternative mitigation site comparison tool that will allow to look at different sites and compare them in terms of alternatives. So this kind of has given you a summary of all these tools that are user-friendly, they're easy to use, and they're currently available. Using them in the Lahontan region would be easy to implement them, and you could really benefit from these ongoing funding sources that are continuing to improve these tools, so you can benefit from new enhancements that are going to be going on. And then this would really allow you to help with your planning and your tracking and visualization and reporting your data to the public.
Great tool. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I apologize for not being... This is what would have come up. This is a screenshot of what would have come up if it was working properly. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Alan, I think we need to move along. I'm sorry.
Jen Ray, please, from Learning Land Coast Region. Thank you.
Good afternoon, board members and executive officer. QU Jan. My name is Xian Mei Li. I'm the Assistant Executive Officer of the North Coast Water Board. Prior to joining the North Coast Water Board, I was with San Francisco Bay Water Board for 30 years. And I was the program manager for stormwater, recycled water, waste discharge to land, and wetland protection and in-stream protection. In the last 10 years I was there. So thank you so much for the opportunity to be here to share my experience at the San Francisco Bay region using the tool that was that were just presented by Sarah Pierce and Christina Grosso of SFEI. I will talk about how I used it for program management. I would talk about how I and my staff used it for project management using two specific examples. One is a single project during the permit application process, and then the other example has to do with after we certified multiple projects within very close proximity. And then I will conclude with what I plan to do now that I'm at the North Coast Water Board. So in 2006, Region 2, as a pilot region, started using Wetland Tracker, which is now known as the Eco Atlas, developed by SFEI, to track some of the certified projects. We developed permit conditions and internal procedures, and also working with SFEI to allow the project tracking to happen with the minimum amount of burden on permit staff. After tracking these projects for several years, we were able to analyze the trend. This is one of the charts that we produced from the information in Eco Atlas. First thing you'll notice about this chart is the type of habitats on the y-axis. To track, we came up with standardized definitions for these habitats. Second thing you'll notice is the projects that impact riparian habitats outnumber other types of projects. So, we use this information to guide our program management priorities. Given the number of projects that impacted riparian habitats, we issued several multi-year permits for routine stream maintenance activities, such as sediment removal, vegetation removal, and bed and bank repairs. To the park districts, open space districts, and flood control districts, these permits allow planning and approving of these projects on an annual basis as opposed to on a project-by-project basis, which is a lot more efficient. These permits allow us to emphasize impact avoidance and minimization. Furthermore, these permits allow for consolidating necessary compensatory mitigation on the watershed scale to achieve higher level of benefits. So we continue to track and analyze the data to see if the trends continue or change. The trend also gave us cause to want to strengthen our basin plan on stream protection. As a result, the stream protection policy ranked really high on the basin plan triennial review. Now I'm going to move on to the specific example for project management. So this first example is a single development project during permit application process over several years. So this map is from the city's 2002 specific plan that voters approved. You'll notice that in the smaller parcel, there is a creek actually identified, but on the larger parcel, no creeks were identified, which is the parcel at issue. So, by drawing a polygon using EcoAtlas tool with the California Aquatic Inventory resource inventory information in the system. In fact, there are three tributaries on this parcel, the one on the east and the center and the on the west. And the total length of miles is 4 miles. So the center one seems to be the most significant from the EcoAtlas map because it has headwater extending beyond the northern parcel boundary. I can also view the same parcel in Google Earth map, which shows the east and center tributaries, but not the west tributary because there was no vegetation when the image was taken. One thing to know, I know nothing about GIS, and I consider myself technology challenged, but I can pull up these maps easily because the system is so user-friendly. And better yet, without the need for user ID and password, which I have a hard time keeping track of these days. Well, unfortunately, in 2006, the city approved the development plan with a total of 780 residential units at different density on this about 300-acre site. The approved plan would have decimated the east and west tributaries, and the center one was proposed to be relocated to a higher elevation toward the west, and would really have rendered it disconnected from the original tributary above and below it. So in 2012, the Water Board received an application from a developer. Water Board denied the application in 2013. This is a 2014 map from the city's website with the project footprint not only much reduced but shifted to the south and therefore avoided and minimized a lot of impacts to the east and the center tributaries. And for unavoidable impacts, there will be compensatory mitigation required to ensure no net loss. So moving on to a second example that shows the importance of tracking, planning, and visualizing current and future projects using EcoAtlas. So this is a Bay Area map. And I'm going to later on zoom into the Belmont Creek watershed, which is on the west side of the bay. This is the same map with all these dots on, and these dots represent more than 400 projects, certified projects. They are currently in EcoAtlas. The dark green dots are projects completed, the light green dots are projects under construction, and the orange dots are projects being planned. So zoom into the Belmont Creek watershed. This watershed is about midway between San Francisco International Airport and San Jose. Belmont Creek originates from the hills on the west side of the watershed. In the upper and steeper reach, it passes through low-density residential areas and some open space. The middle reach of the creek with gentler slopes passes through medium-density residential and commercial areas. As the lower reach reaches the flatlands, it passes through mixed, higher density residential, commercial, and industrial areas as it goes under a main road, El Camino Real, and Highway 101. The creek then connects to Tidal Slough and the bay on the east. Highway 101, major roads, and railroad cross the creek at various locations. Some of these crossings can be the choke points of the creek system and cause sediment deposition and flooding. I'm going to further zoom in to this area between the major local road and Highway 101, where it is the depositional area and flood-prone area. So in the past several years, by tracking these projects, we notice a trend of frequent sediment and vegetation removals at the same location by the same entities. Those are the orange dots that you saw. We need to update that because those projects were completed. However, these activities are short-term fixes to localize the flooding problems, only dealing with the symptoms, and are not protective nor sustainable. Although we have certified these projects, we have asked for more long-term or regional solutions as part of future permit applications. In receiving its certification for sediment and vegetation removal, a private company agreed to conduct a watershed study from the hills to the bay. To support a watershed-based approach, Waterbore convened a stakeholder group with numerous cities within the watershed, the county, Caltrans, Caltrain, other permitting agencies, and this private company, of course, that funded the watershed study. The purpose of the watershed study is to address flooding problems, but integrate water quality protection and habitat restoration on a watershed scale. This approach has the potential to streamline permitting for flood control projects and facilitate grant funding applications for potential multiple benefits. So this study initially screened 9 alternatives as shown on the map. The stakeholder group reached consensus to further study 5 alternatives individually and in different combinations. These 5 alternatives are shown in the enlarged circles on the map and also highlighted on the slide. As you can see, number 5, creek restoration, is sort of right above the depositional area and the flood prone area. And this creek actually is within, this segment of the creek is actually within City Park. Mm-hmm. So it has room to be laid back and have the floodplain restored. Mm-hmm. And will definitely trap sediment. First reduce the erosion and then trap any upstream sediment at the location and increase the habitat value. So it got a lot of support from the stakeholders and permitting agencies. So, to summarize, the Eco Atlas provides important information required to track habitat losses and gains on a project level, watershed level, or regional level. Staff can use it to assess if mitigation is progressing and successful. The program as a whole can use the information to inform our permitting and policy decisions. For external stakeholders, it can be a planning tool that allows local entities to plan for land use decisions, to identify where it may be priority development versus priority conservation areas. It can be used by the project proponents on project planning or permit applications. For instance, the applicants can propose their mitigation projects that might connect with other ongoing efforts within the same watershed and thus provide higher level of benefit. So I'm currently working with Christina to try to get new and existing certified projects from North Bay region, North Coast region, into the Eco Atlas, given all these potential benefits. So this concludes my presentation.
We have it's a great presentation. Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you for coming all the way down here and sharing your information with us.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Shivray and Clara and Christina. I just wanted to wrap up and say the reason why Region 1, Region 2 has such as, has these 400 projects, I call it a critical mass, is that they, Shivray was instrumental in getting these, getting a requirement in the 401 application, working with their attorney to get this in the 401 for certain projects, and so that was, I think that was part of one of your questions, okay. Was, you know, so they've been doing this for 10 years or more?
2006,
yeah, right after I left. So with that, so yeah, my, I guess the bottom line is we don't have to wait. We don't have to be behind State Board. We can get out in front of State Board.
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
We'd be the first step.
Hello, board members. My name is Scott Ferguson, and I just want to wrap a few things up and leave just a real brief discussion. I know we still have a couple more items to move on, but I want to first thank Sarah and Christina and Shinrei for excellent presentations, and Toby Tyler for organizing this and bringing a wealth of information on just two tools that are out there, but very powerful tools. And we've been talking over this board meeting, the last couple board meetings, about wetland restoration, wetlands in general, aquatic habitat, how it relates to climate change. And what we're looking for from you is a little insight or some direction possibly about, is this something, are these two specific tools something that you would like board staff to continue to pursue and look for opportunities to implement into our daily lives to help us make management decisions, planning decisions? Is it something that, and this is, and I realize we've heard a lot of information today, so we could easily come back in a little bit with a more formal presentation about, or proposal about, how we would like to wade into this and start implementing it throughout the Lahontan region. So in preparation for that, we would like to see if that, number one, is something you would like us to do. And if so, before we go on that venture, do you have a little more insight or direction on how you might think we would you would like to see us use it? And I'll just leave it at that.
Board members, Mr. Pumphrey?
Gee, I don't know if that'd be helpful or not.
Sensing a little.
Yes, that was. I'm sorry.
Yes.
That was sarcasm.
I sensed it.
I can't. The answer to the first question is really easy. The answer to the second question is, I don't know.
Okay.
But this is powerful stuff. And we need to make every use of it we possibly can.
Okay.
Do we have the budget to train staff to be able to use this tool?
I think it's more it's just the time element to come up to speed. I mean, something that we saw is that, like with Eco Atlas, it appears to be very user friendly. You heard Shinrei say, technology challenged, trouble remembering passwords, not an issue.
They all seem irresistible.
Yeah. So.
I think it's a great idea and a short presentation in the future.
You can show us your new skills.
Yeah, I think your idea of coming back to us with a proposal of how you see using this, I like the idea of incorporating it into the 401 applications. That sounds very powerful.
Yeah.
So, yes, come back with a proposal.
Okay.
No, why do we need a proposal? Just come back and show us how you're using it.
Yeah.
We'll tell you how we are using it and plan to continue to use it.
And
you can provide feedback on that, as always.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go forward.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
And yes, I mean, I think I would be interested in hearing about specific things like putting it on the 401 application.
Right.
You know, so the making how we can use it as a tool.
Yes.
Okay.
With minimal burden on staff and all, and applicants.
Right.
So, okay. Thank you very much.
Great item. Okay, now we're down to our last and most wonderful item, which is a presentation from the Alpine Watershed Group on their efforts to collaborate in Alpine Council.
Okay. Hi, all. I'm Carly